Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, this is Adam.
Hi, this is Chris.
Welcome to another edition of Speaking of Reliability. And Chris and I decided to do an episode because he had a really good question. So Chris, what was your question?
My question was around reliability for software. I know that MTBF is looked upon as not a very good metric, at least for hardware applications. And I was wondering about if that is also true for software, since we don't really have infant mortality or wear out modes for software, and more encounter random failures. So why wouldn't the exponential function apply here, and along with that, an MTBF number?
I think there's two parts to the answer. One is, I know what we give MTBF a hard time, but MTBF's not a bad metric. The problem is it's over-applied, and it's used to communicate in applications where it's not appropriate, like 90% of the time. So I did have to clarify this once in a class, because they did, you know, use MTBF for different things, and they wanted to know why was it so prevalent. And it's kind of like its success was its demise. So the reason why I think MTBF, you know, became a popular common metric is that it allows you to still derive reliability over specific periods of time, based on different shape parameters. So in other words, it allows a flexibility. And this was very helpful for reliability engineers and statisticians to communicate with each other. The problem is that when you go beyond that group and use it, it very quickly becomes a bad metric because of a lack of understanding of the parameters needed around it and what it means. So that's how it got a bad reputation, is that it went beyond the kind of core math people who there was value in it, because it wasn't constrained, to groups of people where you needed that constraint. So I think that's really the full fair judgment of it. And I do very much believe we need to get it out of the common language, because, you know, most of the people who we are communicating metrics with are not statisticians who want to do interpretive calculations with it, right? They're project managers and engineers, and so it needs to be locked down. And that's why it needs to be something else, you know, kind of really what is one of the derivatives of it, right? One of the derivatives you calculate with MTBF is over a specific period of time and a specific Weibull shape parameter. You calculate the reliability for a period of time. Well, that's really what needs to be communicated, right? That has a 99% reliability. So I just wanted to start with that with regard to it being a bad metric or good metric. It's about application. Then my thoughts, which you probably were, that's probably less harsh than you expected. You probably expected me to just like totally come down on it.
Well, no, not exactly. But I wanted to hear reasoning if, you know, MTBF couldn't be used in any circumstance.
Yeah.
I know it's useful when we talk about random failures, you know, viable shape parameter of one, yeah. And then you can use it. But yeah, so for software, you know, so it sounds like that would be a good application. Have you seen that in your experience?
Yeah, I don't know. So here's the thing with software, is that there's a lot of ways to model it, because it's so different than electromechanical. Electromechanical, you're looking to characterize the variabilities in manufacture and the variabilities in use that drive specific failure rates, whereas software is always manufactured the exact same way. The application is usually quite consistent. So there's other factors that drive. The reliability typically is a matter of exposure of certain combinations of input that may or may not have been evaluated in advance that caused it to do something unexpected. And a lot go ahead.
Yeah, so I would characterize that as a use and variability, that different users use it in different ways, and maybe you get an input that's outside of a range, or yeah. The hardware system that is connected to, you know, is all of a sudden providing parameters that weren't anticipated previously.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think you're right. I can see use variability. Yeah.
I think you can say use. Yeah, that there's a variability from use case. But the so I'm not sure where if I'm going to end up with a conclusive answer, because the reliability curve I like best for software is the downward arc curve, that sawtooth, if you know what I'm talking about. It's a, you know, exponentially high that drops down slowly, kind of like
an exponential curve. You get your next release. Yeah, and you get your next release and just start with more failures again. And
exactly. It's all sawtooth where as it's progressing in usage, where they're basically release it and are getting more feedback from understanding the full use case, right? The more people use it, the broader their use case understanding becomes. And they release fixes that address. So basically, you know, they're getting to slowly see all the possible input combinations and they're addressing them individually. And the sawtooth is happening because they at the same time are usually adding features or adding other things that effectively are bringing that back up because you've introduced variables that are new sets of combinations. So you end up with this kind of sawtooth, and you get the best reliability usually at the point where they, you know, they decide to, you know, no longer support the software, basically cancel it and replace it, which is always kind of ironic. And you see some interesting things with that. I think with Microsoft XP, the operating system, is one of the best examples of that, where when they finally, after so many years, it was really pretty rock solid by the time it was at the end of its life. And they released Windows Vista, and that was so bad, you know, back up to the top of that curve, that they went backwards and allowed you to order computers with XP on it. So in other words, when Vista came out, when you ordered a computer from Dell, you could select to instead have XP loaded on it instead of Vista, because it was so good at that point when they canceled it. So that's kind of the funny thing with software.
Yes, software is a totally different beast. I was wondering, in terms of predicting reliability, software reliability, have you come across any models that work in your experience in terms of predicting reliability for software?
I have. It's very interesting. And when you first hear this kind of approach, it sounds strange, but then you realize how it makes sense. And the way you predict it is you use some methodologies that evaluate the way it was created. So that's really a fundamental shift. You aren't evaluating the software. You're predicting the likelihood of it performing well, and as you said, you know, under diverse use case, with how it was made, what methods were used when it was made. So effectively, you're evaluating the people who made it and not the software, which is really interesting. I mean, that's so dramatically different than how we would do it with an electromechanical product. But in some ways, philosophically, that's kind of what you're doing to electromechanical product anyway, right? Because the way you improve reliability is improve the processes that you use in design and development, which, you know, result in a better product. So I wonder if you could do that to some degree with electromechanical product, if you could predict the reliability based on predicting the, you know, having had done evaluation methods for the processes it was designed under.
So you use like a maturity matrix to predict the reliability of the product?
In a sense. Yeah, in a sense. And there's actually was some very interesting new guidelines that have been released for this. I'm trying to think of her name. She was one of the co-authors of it. It's become the new international standard. It's going to pop in my head any second. But
is it Anne-Marie Neufelder?
Yes. Okay. Anne-Marie, yes, that's right. Good. Okay, so so it's with these, I guess, that is kind of an interesting way to put it as far as evaluating it, you know, maturity, because there's things like, did you run specific scripts to look for lines of code that aren't used, right? Because those are sitting out there as kind of wild cards that you're not using in your normal combinations, but something might trip them active, right? And then there's a different combinations of, you know, sequence that occurs. So you could say, did you do methodology to remove lines of code that are no longer actually needed, but still there? Did you do this methodology? And as you stack those up, you can use that to project the likely reliability, for the product when it's released. Because as you said, you're characterizing use case, all the possible combinations. So if each of these methodologies is known to defend against that, that's how they do it.
So you would really have to dive into the code and analyze what's used, what's not used, and kind of trace your way through the code to come up with this?
That's the method, but the thing is that you couldn't do that just having the code. You have to evaluate the process. So if you don't have access to the process that the software engineers use to make it, you wouldn't be able to use this methodology. It would be too late. It would be very hard to predict. So if you were just given code or had old code that you were going to evaluate, you'd pretty much have to come up with data collection systems and usage to see under all the possible combinations of use case what it would be. So which, you know, obviously is much more time consuming.
Okay. Would part of this be looking at the requirements, the quality of the requirements, and then the test coverage against the requirements?
I'm not sure if I understand what you mean.
So software requirements that you first write before you start coding, you need to know what you're trying to program. And so for each requirement that you set forth, you want to have, you know, a test case that you test your code against later to see if you end up meeting all the requirements you wrote down. So can you look at, you know, okay, we have all requirements covered with tests, or, well, we don't have tests for this. We only have 80% of our requirements covered with test cases.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the requirements will be a big, guiding factor in evaluating these methods. So I imagine that seeing what the team should have selected for methodologies would be based on the requirements that were originally set up. Because I'm sure the toolbox is quite diverse for methodologies. So it would, I would imagine that would, you know, direct you to, okay, what should we, you know, to evaluate, what should they pull out of the toolbox and used, you know, to ensure X amount of quality and the likelihood of this software being robust. But yeah, it'd be interesting. Actually, you know, you're making me think, this would be a great conversation. I should pull in I have software reliability people that I use in, you know, Apex Ridge, and I'm actually thinking this would be a great discussion to extend with them and, go a little deeper. So maybe we could do it together. That'd be pretty fun.
Absolutely. I was thinking, what about things like defect arrival rates? Have you used that to model and predict reliability? If you see throughout the project, you know, how many defects in which phase of the project do you see?
Oh, that's kind of interesting. Yeah, because, you know, with defect, you know, I think of it having to do with the population of, you know, physical systems. So you're saying, would you use a similar methodology as you go through the phases of development to where you would effectively measure them not using a process that should be prescribed as a defect? Is that what you're saying?
So I'm thinking like defect as in the software bug. And then when you do your testing of the software, maybe if you're in an agile environment, every sprint, you know, you run your test cases against that new release sprint, and you find an X amount of defects each time of a certain severities. And, you know, there are reasons why maybe that defect count goes up if you have more features in that particular sprint versus you've just used the sprint to mitigate known bugs that you found in a previous sprint. And some methodology of looking at these arrival rates, maybe versus sprint complexity or feature complexity that got added, to see if you're making headway and kind of predict, like, okay, I've now at the end of this testing at this sprint, we maybe have an X number of latent defects still in the software that we haven't found.
Yeah. It's actually really interesting. So basically you're saying, like, characterize the rate that bugs are being found and then project it out, which would basically be that exponential curve, the sawtooth one we're talking about, but without the sawtooth.
Yeah.
And to have predefined, you know, values, shape parameters for common projections of rate of defects found, bugs found. And then, yeah, if you had the rest of that equation, right, you just would be able to project out. So that's actually really interesting, which is kind of what you'd imagine, right? So actually, that's a really good question to ask somebody like Anne-Marie or, you know, some of the other people who I work with on this about that, about if they project it out that way, if anybody tracks the rate of bug finding and projects it out, because that should work based if that curve is true, right?
Right, right. It would be more than just purely looking at the number of defects, because you have to look at, you know, what was the amount of testing effort put into that particular time period, and, you know, what's the number of features. So you would have to normalize that somehow against multiple parameters.
Yep. All right, well, let's take a moment, take a break, and we'll be right back.
Kirk Gray here to mention that John Paskowitz and I published a book, Next Generation Halton Haas, Robust Design of Electronics and Systems, which provides the basics of applying Halton Haas and reveals how Halton Haas can discover software issues also. To find out more and get a copy, go to exendoreliability.com/go/halt.
Okay, we're back. And actually, Chris and I didn't stop talking during the break. We kind of continued there. And we were talking about, okay, so now the software has come to a point of maturity that, you know, getting closer to release. Usually there is this point then when the software, you know, closer to the final release rev, and the electromechanical systems, if it's controlling electromechanical systems, get brought together for the first time. And, you know, this, it's being evaluated as a full system. So how is that? How is that evaluated, and what's that like? In my experience, that's usually in the reliability growth program, which is beginning to measure and improve the reliability based on the high-level product goals. And you're effectively, the measure part is generating a statistical confidence in your ultimate product reliability goal that you're using to assist making program decisions. You know, we want to be at 60% statistical confidence at this phase of the program. And an important part of this is that the software is a part of this now, and the bugs that are occurring in software are being recorded as part of the product failure. I don't know, Chris, have you kind of seen that at all or experienced that?
So yeah, my experience has been where we've tried to integrate software and hardware early on in the program, not so much towards the end. And of course, you don't have your final hardware ready yet. It's getting developed as the software is being developed. It happens in parallel. But, you know, first it starts with the use of simulators, where maybe computer just simulates the behavior and the input output from the hardware. Then, you know, you want to try the software as you develop it on prototypes. And then, yeah, finally you get the final hardware and you can, you know, you put the software on there and improve it to make it work with the real hardware.
Yeah.
Yes. And then you go into the reliability growth, or I guess the reliability growth kind of happens through that whole program, but it's really meaningful when you have your final hardware.
Yeah, I always see that as a big turning point for the software people, because they've been kind of working in a bubble, so to speak, with their simulators, right? And then to take it and put it on the actual system, because in the simulator, to some degree, it doesn't have the variabilities of the actual system, right? Because the system's not operating like it's supposed to, you know, as you're maturing it. So it's not like the simulator. So I think that if we're talking about use case being what we're trying to characterize, the way the software reacts, that's a huge jump going from a simulator to the actual system, which is not doing what it's supposed to be doing yet.
Yeah, and I think things like timing comes into play at that point. You're probably not simulating the effects of delay timing, or timing just doesn't work the same on the real hardware as it does on simulators. Yeah. So that you could run into timing issues as well.
Yeah. I mean, one personal experience I had, I can remember from a project, was the software team in their simulator had assumed that a three-axis kind of robotic system, that each axis would be driving independently in the sense, or serial, in the sense of you wouldn't have multiple axes driving at the same time. So the x-axis would drive, finish, the y-axis would drive, and that's the way they're assuming it would go. But in real life, the mechanical electrical guys had decided to have them drive at the same time. So it would drive X, Y at the same time to get to its position. So that's totally different current loading, and obviously very different signal communication for the drive, you know, the stepper motors. So that was a huge surprise to them when they integrated to the full system. So it wasn't even the system you know, abnormalities, or it was actually a miscommunication in the product specifications, right, as to how it was going to operate, or just a non-clarification of it, because that's kind of a subtle thing. Do they drive at the same time or not? You know, that's something easily could be changed. So that was one that, you know, I experienced firsthand, that for the software guys, they kind of got one of the surprises they got when they began to integrate into the full system.
Yeah, things like I've worked on systems with a stage that has multiple axes, and you could run into things that are in the way of when you're moving the stage around, and you have to have exclusion zones in the software in order to avoid certain locations of the stage.
Yeah. Yeah, so actually, you know, it's funny, for that sawtooth curve, the first tooth should really be huge, right? The first tooth should be the beginning of the reliability growth program, where they go from simulator to real life for the first time, right? So that's probably a more realistic, you know, kind of estimation of what happens.
I was in a situation where there were two different software development teams that were sharing code for slightly different hardware. And one team was on a, I don't know, monthly or so basis getting code and merging the code again with the other team, or getting a new, updating the baseline. And we ran into issues where there had been huge changes to the baseline code. And when the code got merged, there were a lot of issues that we had with the software, because things had been changed and not communicated. And we spent a couple of weeks just getting back to the prior state in terms of reliability.
Yeah. So I think the answer to our original question is, if it's, does MTBF, is that a good metric? I think our answer is maybe no, because it would be very hard to characterize that sawtooth curve. You might be able to grab a beta shape for that exponential part of the function, but the sawtooth part, which is really the areas of pain, wouldn't be characterized by that. So I guess if you asked me to give an answer, I would say no, MTBF would be hard. And I think we realize there's really two parts to the estimation. There is the evaluation of the process, which seems to give a very good projection, and the industry is using that a lot. And then there's that collection of data as it's being used and tested, that's characterizing all the variabilities of use case, those combinations that generate defects. So it seems like that's kind of what we kind of hashed out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, again, with the sawtooth, you know, you get the normalization of parameters. That was my point I was trying to make earlier with merging the branches together. You could have a much higher sawtooth in the middle of your development process than you had in the beginning, because something changed that you weren't expecting.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, that was really good. That was kind of interesting. It was interesting to kind of find out, they really kind of hashed that out in more detail as two non-software people.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to having follow-up conversations with your software reliability guys as well.
Yeah, actually, absolutely. That's going to happen. That would be very good. And that'll happen soon, because one of them's actually coming over my house on Thursday night for cake for my 45th birthday. So he lives nearby. So I'll corner him. I'll give him a piece of cake and then corner him with a bunch of questions.
All right. Well, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, great. Well, good conversation. And we'll talk again soon.
Yes. Thanks, Adam. Looking forward to it.
And to any of our listeners, we'd love getting comments and questions. So please send us comments and questions, and we'll always respond. All right, take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.